This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Let's do a little economics 101 for a moment. We know that low oil prices are supposedly great for the economy. Cheap oil stimulates manufacturing, goods become cheaper, people travel more, and so on. Higher oil prices equals recession. It turns out that cheap oil doesn't seem to be delivering an economic boom. All you have to do is look around, and the picture is much more complicated. James Surowiecki is the New Yorker's explainer-in-chief on anything related to the economy, and he called up Daniel Yergin, an energy consultant and the author of a Pulitzer Prize-winning book on oil, politics, and history. James wanted to know how oil got so cheap and what that means today.
Three things have come together to bring down the price of oil. The first thing that happened was this incredible surge of supply from the United States. Since 2008 till the middle of 2015, U.S. oil production almost doubled, and supply was coming up from other places, too. At the same time, the world economy was slowing down and not growing at the rate people had expected. And in particular, China was slowing down, and that meant weaker demand while supply was increasing. And then the third critical thing that happened was the OPEC countries got together, and instead of doing what kind of markets expected them to do, cut their supply, they decided to, well, let the market manage the market. And that's when this dramatic price decline, collapse, really began.
Right.
You know, the increase, the surplus in the oil market today is less than 2%, but it's been enough to drive oil prices down 70%.
That's amazing. The boom in U.S. oil production that you're talking about is essentially the result of shale oil, right? This new technology that's allowed us to access reserves that previously had essentially not been available to us.
Yeah. Yeah. If you went back to 2008, 2009, people would have thought the idea of shale oil, it couldn't work. But then it started to work, and it really worked, I think, more rapidly and in terms of volumes, much more than anybody had anticipated.
So we have this huge glut of oil. So why is cheap oil not translated into more of a stimulus, more of a boom for the U.S. economy?
The reason is that we had this tremendous growth of the shale industry. And it was, you know, the major source of job creation in the years after the financial crisis. Basically, every state in the country was benefiting from this because of whether they manufactured steel or information technology, computers. You were getting a sort of a dramatic increase in capital expenditures going into equipment and into job creation, added a couple of million jobs to the economy. So with this downturn now, company after company has cut its budget if it's an oil and gas company. People are losing their jobs. The suppliers who make equipment, make steel, have lost business, and they too are being hit and are having to lay off people. So you've had that loss. At the same time, you have more money in motorist pockets. But they don't get it all at once where they go, then say, I'm going to go out and buy something big. So one place where you've actually seen a big jump in spending is in convenience stores at gasoline stations that are up 6 or 8% over the last year or so.
Right.
But cumulatively, for consumers, this is a, you know, is a very significant positive.
Got it. So one of the interesting questions is, why do you think OPEC, instead of trying to cut back production to hold up prices, just kept pumping the oil? And as a result, we now have this, have had this really big glut of oil on the market.
Well, OPEC did not have a unified mind on this. Huh. The Saudis and the other countries, Arab Gulf countries, as they're called, did not want to cut production because they were the only ones who could actually or would actually cut production. And in particular, this all happened after the beginning of the nuclear negotiations between Iran, the United States, and other countries. And they could see that as a result of this nuclear movement towards a nuclear agreement, the sanctions that had kept Iranian oil, about half of Iranian oil, out of the market would be lifted, and Iranian oil would come back into the market. So they, in particular, were implicitly saying, not explicitly, we're not going to cut back our supply in order to make room for additional oil from our greatest rival, Iran. Saudi Arabia has broken diplomatic relations with Iran. The Saudi embassy has been burned in Tehran. Normally, that would have sent oil prices up. It doesn't even cause a twitch in the oil market because it's because of the real surplus that's there now. But if you have a tighter market and you have a disruption in some place or heightened geopolitical risk, that will show up in the oil price.
But the oil market historically has had these sort of boom and bust cycles. And when you think about what the future holds, what do you think is going to happen to oil production and to oil prices?
Well, it's kind of amazing. The oil industry is a long-term industry. People make investments now, and you don't see the impact for 10 years or longer. And yet it seems every 3 or 4 years at least, the whole perspective, the whole outlook changes.
Yeah, right.
There's a tendency wherever you are to think, well, it's a straight highway, a flat line from that, but this market is going to move in cycles as it always has. It's so deeply involved with geopolitics. It's a story that has no ending in sight.
Daniel Yergin, the author of The Prize and The Quest, talking with The New Yorker's James Surowiecki. You can find Surowiecki's articles on oil and other subjects at newyorkerradio.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.